Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and this is the second in a series of interviews with Ryan Gary. Ryan, are you there?
I sure am. Thanks, Ken.
Ryan, last time we talked about many things, but one of them was the power of curiosity. That was one of the things that jumped out at me on how that's actually one of the ultimate, maybe the ultimate, problem solver and potential fulfiller is the power of curiosity. So I recommend if people haven't heard that call that they check in our archive and listen to that one. But today we're going to talk about something that might be more immediately and obviously useful to people that are marketers and running businesses. Though I do think the power of curiosity is eminently practical. But today we're going to talk about some insights that Ryan developed based on a lot of things, but including his experience working at two pretty interesting organizations. One is University of Phoenix, and the other is Infusionsoft. And these are both companies that grew from very small beginnings to pretty big size and deal with, on the one hand, education, and on the other hand, well, education in the sense, educating marketers how to use sophisticated customer relation management tools. So, you know, one of the beginner's mistakes, and sometimes we make it even long after we are beginners, is that we focus so much on the sale or generating the lead, as the case may be, that we forget that the money's in the follow-up. And Ryan has a very well-thought-out vision of how to think a framework, of how to think about the follow-up in a way that's really positive for the prospect and the customer and very profitable for the business owner. So Ryan, let's jump in.
Sounds good. Everything you said, it's really interesting, very interesting to me, how you recognize that there were some direct similarities between University of Phoenix and Infusionsoft. And that's the way that I saw it too. And what's interesting is when I left, if I can give a little plug for myself here, just to show how tightly entwined those two concepts are. When I left University of Phoenix, I was in the top 1-3% income earners. Out of about 13,000 people. So I had been around the block. I'd been there almost a decade. And when I left, I'd been there for almost a third of my entire life. Obviously it was very, very formative for me to be there that long, especially considering when I started, there were less than 300 enrollment counselors online. And when I left, they were closing up on about 3,500 enrollment counselors online. So just tremendous growth during the time that I was there. And I helped them start their very first call center, their very first qualification center to qualify the leads coming in. And so I went from dealing with onesie, twosie leads to dealing with mass flows of leads and literally being a hub for all of the leads that came into University of Phoenix and then an Apollo group. And then being able to then shuffle them out to the different divisions. Well, so closely entwined were that I saw University of Phoenix and that educational system and Infusionsoft that my exact same methodologies applied so well that when I started at Infusionsoft, you were supposed to sit in training for a month before you could be on the phone. Well, I was there for about a week and a half of this training. I said, scrap that, put me on the phone, like give me leads. Like, I don't care. Like I will sneak leads out of your office and I will call them at night and close them from my home. If I have to get me on the phone, this is killing me. So they begrudgingly let me get on the phone within a week and a half. If I remember the exact number, I think it was $42,000 in revenue. It was over $40,000 in revenue in a week and a half. Selling Infusionsoft because the process was so very similar in terms of where are you at, where are you trying to get to be, and what are the black holes that are preventing you from being able to get there, and what are you going to do along each step of the way. So it's interesting how the process I'm sharing with you worked at University of Phoenix, and it worked dramatically better when it got into a much more real world one-on-one situation with the business owner, as opposed to just looking at someone's life in general. So the two are very closely entwined to each other. And I think it's great that you recognize that.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're very, very similar businesses. So tell us what came from this experience. I mean, obviously, you gave a lot of thought to what you're doing at both places, and that you had a level of experience and a volume of experience that a lot of people just might not even see in an entire career on the lead generation and lead management side.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate for that. Sometimes I sit back and I just look at everything that I've had the privilege of being a part of, and you know, and especially with my experience at Infusionsoft and working directly with, for those of you who are familiar with the company, I mean, you'll recognize they have a very very big list of top tier quote unquote gurus who utilize them and who promote for them, and so being able to see behind the curtains into a lot of multi-million-dollar businesses, a lot of supposedly multi-million-dollar businesses behind the curtains into a lot of what really goes on, I really have had the privilege of seeing things in a way, and the insight that came from this really was validation of concepts that I was developing while at University of Phoenix. And so I was developing this all over these years, and it pretty much comes down to this, that there is a very real cycle. There's a very real life cycle to consumers. And to start seeing prospects, and the word consumers is something that I carefully chosen that word. You know, I'll use that word a lot, because to me, a consumer is someone who is doing that. They're just simply consuming what you have. And so it is a word that spans the gap between somebody who's just an who just sees your advertisement, because getting them to consume your advertisement is stage one. Step two is getting them to click on your advertisement. Then you need to get them to consume the material on your page, on your opt-in page, on your video. And then, you know, hopefully through that consumption, they will be intrigued enough to be able to continue down the path. And so then once, of course, they are consumers, you know, what is their consumption like then? Well, once they become customers, you know, they're still consumers. And so I spent years trying to find the right combination of words to explain this, and I finally settled on consumer as being the best. And so there is a very real cycle or a phase, a step process that I've seen again and again be an absolute boon to entrepreneurs to be able to have a framework to operate within. You know, many entrepreneurs and many entrepreneurs, especially if they're bootstrapping it, you know, the idea of doing planning and forecasting and the idea of building out long sequences almost seems laughable sometimes. It's like, you know, I'm just trying to stay alive this month. I don't need to worry about my 3 month plan. I don't need to worry about what's going to happen after the sale. I don't need to worry about any of that. I just need to get the sale. And I completely understand that mentality. However, that being said, as long as you stay in that mentality, there's nothing wrong with dipping into crunch time where I need to close some sales. There's nothing wrong with that. But you can't live there and you can't stay there. And when you come out, you have to realize that unless you have a process for what you're doing, you don't know what you're doing. It was W. Edwards Deming that said that first. And, you know, let me repeat that, because it's very, very important. If you do not have a process for what you're doing, you don't know what you're doing. And we all know from our marketing that who wants to buy from somebody that doesn't know what they're doing?
Excuse me. I'm both laughing and coughing at the same time. nobody does. It's interesting, you know, that's a very subtle point, but people worry about headlines and calls to action and bullet points and PSs and all this kind of stuff. There are some more fundamental things that make or break sales, and you just put your finger on one of them that hardly anybody ever talks about, which is one of the questions that a consumer has is, does this guy know what he's doing if I'm going to give him money?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, your advertising and promotions should all be designed to make sure that point is conveyed at every possible opportunity in various ways. So yeah, please go ahead.
That's exactly. You do need to make sure. And as a matter of fact, there's been a lot of, you know, with there being a lot of shining stars out there teaching, you know, preaching a better way to people, teaching people how to become gurus in their own right. What's important is what makes a guru versus someone else is simply is literally the amount of experience that they have, the amount of expertise they have, and all of that. That's great. But even somebody who's an expert at content, if they don't have that content laid out in a way that is logical and coherent to the consumer, if they don't have that laid out that way, it doesn't matter. It's not going anywhere. And I saw this with curriculum development at University of Phoenix, and I saw this with, you know, students who would struggle with one class versus another, and being able to identify personality patterns and being able to match them up with curriculum plans. You know, I recognize the need for there to be a for the information to be delivered in a way that is, person can follow. Otherwise, you know, you don't know what they're doing, they don't know what they're doing, and that just leads to a lot of confusion. And so, you know, if you want people to trust you, to respect you, to seize the authority, pay attention to the cycle I'm going to reveal to you right now. And the cycle itself has five main stages. Three of them are critical in the fact that they are tied together. The other two stages are kind of floaters. They show up at a lot of hinge points. And so we're going to focus on the three that stick together, because this is kind of the timeline of the consumer. So we're going to stick to this, and then from that, we'll if we have time, we'll go into the rest. If not, I've got this information. We'll show that at a later time. But the first step is, and this step will seem very familiar, and that's generation to conversion. The first stage is generation to conversion. And this is the stage in which you are literally generating traffic, generating market awareness, generating buzz, generating whatever it is that you're generating. You have to generate some type of momentum. And through that momentum, get eyes on your site, get feet on the street, get people in the door, get butts in seats. It doesn't matter what it is. You have to generate the ability to have somebody's attention, to get them to consume something, right? So as consumers, we need to generate those initial baseline consumers. Then, of course, at some point, we want to convert those people. So in between this, and I'm not going to go, because each one of these five stages actually has five stages within them. So it may seem inordinately complex, but it's been well thought out and been rigorously tested. And it makes things a lot simpler. And we're not going to go into all the stages of each one, but the generation to conversion is very important for people to understand that a little bit, because people talk about lead generation and conversion so much, and there's a very big divergence from where I take it. And the five stages between generation and conversion are, first, traffic generation. From traffic generation to lead generation, once you've generated that lead, to educate that lead. Once you educate, during the education process, you segment that lead, and through that segmentation, that leads to inherent and natural lead conversion. Let me walk through that real fast. That, you know, so the timeline here is you generate traffic to your site, you get somebody to opt in. That's your lead generation. Well, based off of what did they opt in for? What are they consuming? What are they trying to get from you? Well, that's generally more educational material on who you are, what you do, you know, educating them on the marketplace itself. You know, let me teach you a little bit more about marketing, about this, about that, not necessarily directly tied to the product, but indirectly. Well, a lot of people understand that, but what they don't, what's missing from a lot of systems out there is the segmentation based off of their consumption, based off of their behavior during the educational phase. So if you're sending emails to a certain traffic group, if you're segmenting, here are my leads from this particular AdWords campaign, here are my leads from this affiliate, here are my leads from this person. If you have those segments in your database, now you can measure your opt-in rates based off of specific traffic sources. That's not necessarily anything new, something we all should be doing. But then why let the segmentation end there? Why should segmentation end at, okay, we had so many opt-ins and so many sales? That you're missing a couple steps there, because we also need to segment based on their education, based on what are they doing during the educational phase where we're trying to, you know, massage their shoulders, warm them up to us so they can see us for the authority and expert that we really truly are, And so then through that segmentation, you can target them differently so you have the right message to the right person at the right time. And that right there leads to natural lead conversion, not forced, not coerced, not mentally persuaded lead conversion, but lead conversion from educated buyers who know that what decision they're making. And because they know what decision they're making, they're going to be the best kind of clients you could possibly have. And let's face it, anybody who's been in business long enough knows it's not about getting clients. It's about getting the right clients.
That's a really good point, because when I see some of these, to put it politely, persuasion methods being promoted out there, I'm thinking, well, that's great. You'll sign the deal, and then you're going to spend the next several weeks, months, or maybe even years dealing with a problem that you've created by, you know, enrolling somebody that shouldn't have been enrolled. Now we're using enroll in the broadest sense. Ryan happens to come from, you know, the education background, so, you know, we're talking about enrolling somebody in a program. But really, every deal, whether it's, you know, building a jet aircraft or, you know, or mowing your, or having somebody mow your lawn, there's an enrollment process. And yeah, you can be the most persuasive guy in the world. You can know every trick in the world to, you know, bend people to your will.
And you will create a living hell for yourself
forever. What's that?
Is, and you'll create a living hell for yourself. Have at it.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's the definition of karma. But how about just doing it? How about avoiding all that and doing it right the first time? So I really like where you're going with this, Ryan.
I appreciate that. And one thing to point out too, that before we move on to the next phase, because it's getting really good. People talk a lot about getting sales. And I'm actually going to be releasing a sales training product. I've been in sales, you know, effectively my whole life, and I know a number of international sales trainers, and they've been really encouraging me to get my stuff out there. And so one of the things that I just got done wrapping up was talking about the fact that people talk about getting the sale, and they think that a sale is only when a transaction of money has occurred. And what's interesting is actually, just getting somebody to even see your advertisement is a sale. You had to sell somebody on your ability to even be there for them to even see your advertisement. Then you had to sell the consumer on that ad to get them to click it. Then you had to sell them to engage with you at some level so you could have a prospect. Then you had to sell them to continue to engage with you until the point to where they do purchase. So in all reality, by the time you have money transacted and you actually have money in your pocket, it's the fifth, sixth, or even the tenth sale of that individual. It's the tenth time that in their mind you converted them.
This is so correct. And really, Ryan's just given you the difference between a mediocre sales professional and a real pro. Because the real pro realizes, that there's a lot of steps to the process. And every little step is significant.
Absolutely, it is, and this is where we're going to lead. This is going to tie us directly into the next stage. Have I shared with you my concept of the usage theory?
I'm not sure.
Have I shared that with you? My usage theory comes from. The usage theory itself should kind of stand on its own legs. Let me give you one aspect of the usage theory. The fundamental concept of usage theory, without going completely into it, is, you know, it doesn't matter how good your product is. It doesn't matter how good your copy is. Unless you can get somebody to read your copy, unless you get them to use your copy, it's not going to do any good. You can have the best sales video in the world, but if you don't have people watching it, its actual value is irregardless. Regardless of the potential value that a product or a service or an iota of information has, regardless of its potential value, it could be the most valuable thing in the world. But unless somebody uses it, it's not going to. The potential value will never be realized. It has to be utilized. So all value in the real world is bottlenecked by usage. And so that's where a lot of time should be spent on, is at that usage. But the second point of usage theory is that an interesting concept that I have, that effort is relative. You know, we all know that Einstein taught us that time is relative, But the truth is that effort is relative as well. And the actual definition of usage theory states that effort is relative and that the amount of effort required to maintain or grow is dependent on the usage and efficacy of previous efforts. Each action should lead to the combined ability of the forwarding action. In other words, it's very hard to take somebody from just finding out about you to purchasing. So what do? We insert some steps that can, whereby are much more feasible, and based on that usage of getting them there, it's now much easier to get them to the next point. It's much easier to get a sale from somebody who has used a lot of your products in the past. It's much easier to get a testimonial from somebody who has actually used your product, believe it or not. It's easier to get an affiliate from somebody who actually likes your products. And so the efficacy of our prior efforts is what we're talking about here, because the next stage from once you and that effort that you have in the generation to conversion phase should not die there. That effort should roll forward into the next phase, which is adoption to causation. And the first step is adoption, which in this terms I'm referring to adoption as getting them to adopt what you've given them. Getting them to adopt and to bring in to their life. And remember, I carefully chose this word because think about it, it's you are providing something that's new and different. Just like there's a new or different child that you are bringing into your home. You are offering them something new or different that you sold them, and they're now taking it home. They're now bringing it home. And let's say that sometimes we even have those outright purchases where we're so happy, like we bring it home. We're like, look, wife, look, kids, like look what I have. Like you're super excited. You get that new laptop, and you just can't wait to get it open. Well, the adoption on that, you know, at first it may sound very exciting, but then getting them to use the computer is something. That's why, you know, Apple excelled, because in a lot of ways they're able to get more people using the computer at a lower level than a few people using it at a high degree, like you find with PCs. So the first step, once you've converted somebody, is getting them to adopt what you've given them. And through that adoption, you can eventually, at some point, it's only going to be a natural process for you to be able to get a testimonial, from those people who adopted it. You wouldn't go to somebody, if you could have a crystal ball and you were to look at your list, would you go to the people who bought your product but never used it? Would you go to them for a testimonial?
Obviously not. It's illogical.
It's completely illogical. So the next stage is to get them to adopt it. Once we have them adopting the process, we can then, you know, once we have them do that, and there's actually a lot of time should be spent during this phase into doing client intelligence. And this is where, you know, I've developed a lot of my own technology. I have my own membership site software. I have my own video player. I have my own technology that I've developed. So I can, for myself and for my private clients, I can track who's using what, when, and where. Who's watching videos in the membership site? Who's not? How far are they getting into the videos? How can we change the consumption? How can we change our product based off of people's behaviors? Now, I'm doing this at a much higher level, but you can do it very simply with just, you know, when you send out an ebook, sending out follow-up questions, sending out surveys, sending out, you know, doing follow-up live coaching calls, and just getting a pulse for how well your readers or your subscribers really know the stuff. Asking for questions. By the quality of questions, you will know the quality of or the level of education they have. So get out there and start asking what questions they have. There's lots of ways of finding out, are people actually using this? Are people getting value out of this? And during that process, once you've identified those people who are using it, those are the people that you directly go to and you ask for a testimonial, specifically those people, because those are the people who are not only more willing to give it to you, but it's going to be a legitimate testimonial. It's not a testimonial that they want to give because they want to see their name up on your website and they want some artificial traffic. but they're the ones that are going to give you the legitimate actual testimonial. Then, again, following the concept of usage theory and the efficacy of effort, it would be ridiculous to ask people who just barely bought your product for an outright referral, unless you've been setting the stage for that. You can ask referrals at just about any point, but it would be much easier, so you can do that, and I would recommend it at some points, but it's much easier to target the people who have given you testimonials for referrals, because now you can use that testimonial in getting that referral. Hey, I really appreciate the referral. I really appreciate the testimonial. Would you mind sharing that testimonial with friends or family to let them know about us? That is much easier than the other way. And so, again, we're capitalizing on the effort that we've already done to now get them to give us a testimonial, to give us a referral, and somewhere in there, too, giving us glowing praise on social media sites. Getting that praise on social media sites so other people searching for us can find it. And now that's the point. Because you get people to adopt what you have, they inherently and more naturally, as well as making it easier for you to induce them towards becoming a factor of cause for you. They start causing other people to find out about you. They start causing the marketplace that you have to start widening and start enlarging. They cause people to see you in a new light, and new people to even see you in the first place, but then to see you in a positive way. So we've gone from generation to conversion. Once we've got that conversion to adoption to get them to use it, because they use it, we can now turn them into causative factors. And that leads naturally for those who do give you testimonials, referrals, and glowing praise. How much easier is it to take those people and then turn them into actual affiliates? And that's the third stage, is affiliation ascension. So getting somebody just to affiliate with you and your product is great. And then from there, identifying what's the ascension path for this person. And identifying one thing that I've done with a couple of my clients is identifying in their list, when they get referrals, or from their affiliates, when they get referrals, to actually give people options and say, would you like to receive a 20% commission, or would you like to receive a 20% payout on this, or would you like to pay that 20% forward to your friends and family? Use this link here. So that way, literally, right off the bat, you're segmenting. We're going back to our other stage. You're segmenting your affiliates based off of their motivation for referring you. Are they referring you because they want money? Or are they referring you because they love your product and they want their friends and family to have the access to have it as well, and if they can save the money, great. And then based off of that motivation, we can then ascend them higher. If they're doing it for money, great, fantastic. Let's put you on a path. Let's get you educated. Let's get you, let's get you some more resources. Let's continue the path to ascension to eventually, literally, by following this path, you could take somebody from some remote ad campaign and literally have a process every step of the way for getting them to the point to where they could become an outright joint venture partner with your organization. And you have a process for it. Therefore, you know what you're doing.
Wow. it's funny. And everybody wants to do some of these things. They want referrals, or they want affiliates, or they want conversions, which is great. But very few people look at it in terms of a consistent, self-reinforcing system. Right? And as you put it, where each act, if it's handled correctly, naturally leads to the next one, which leads to the next one. And then there are particular specific sequences that work better than others. For instance, getting somebody to make a referral. Much easier if they've already given you a testimonial. So why not engineer your sequence that way to get the testimonial first and then turn that into getting a referral?
Yeah.
So I thought a lot about this myself, and I call all this stuff micro-conversions. In other words, to get people to focus on all these seemingly small things that are actually not small at all. They're really big, and if you sequence them together intelligently, and are kind of rigorous about it, You end up with some really good outcomes. And, you know, getting people to talk about your business positively and getting people to refer their friends and colleagues to you is really what it's all about. A business that has to rely 100% on paid advertising, you know, that's you really my view is you use paid advertising to sort of kickstart the engine, and you may need to always use it. You may always need to use it depending on the size of your enterprise and how big your infrastructure is and how big your vision is. But you really have to have a vision to generate and deploy your happy customers to bring you more customers, to really make things really click. And if you look at really any business success out there, small or large, there is that element of customers just saying, wow, you got to check out that pizza, or wow, I love those running shoes, or wow, that was a great seminar. And, you know, we've run up to – I'm sorry, we're running – probably actually we've run through our pre – set limit, but this is so interesting.
Okay.
Let's wrap it up in a way that's useful to everybody. But wow, this is a great exposition on how to think about sales systems.
Well, I appreciate that, and yeah, if we can wrap up on something, I have a good analogy for what you just said. It literally just popped in my head, hearing what you said. And first, I do want to touch back that you're right. When you look at the end, at where you want to take people, we begin to see traffic generation and lead generation, lead conversion in a whole new way. That's why when you kind of step back and you look at the kind of more the holistic picture of the entire thing, what's the entire ecology here of my leads, you start doing things on the front end a little differently. And that just leads to a lot more natural sales and everything else, and that leads to a lot more creative juices flowing as well. I've seen it time and time again. What's interesting, the analogy I came up with is this: you said, you know, sometimes you'll need paid traffic to kickstart things. Think of it like this: think of your organization and your company. Think of this process, this cycle I just outlined for you guys. You know, as this: that the end of the cycle fills the front of the cycle. So ultimately, you're going to need traffic. And so if you can have natural inborn traffic, great. And so look at it like this way. So this process is your engine and your car. You may need to pay for some gas. You always need gasoline to go. You're always going to need fuel to go. Traffic is that fuel. You may have to pump some gas in there. You may have to pay somebody else to get you that gas into your engine at first. But once that gasoline is into your engine, it's the efficiency by which your engine burns it, the efficiency by which your engine actually utilizes that fuel is going to determine how far you can go on that for each gallon of that gasoline. But not only that, if you can do this over time, as you continue to go through this process again and again and refine it inside your own company, get it better, 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 and get it watertight, at some point, I can't help believe, Ken, that at some point we can actually, through efficiency and through these processes, we can actually develop our own hypothetical perpetual motion machine, where literally we have more leads coming out of the back end than we put into the front end. Why? Because we paid such close attention to our consumers, to their consumption, and what they're getting out of their interactions with us, that will lead towards that lead generation in the marketplace for us. And that's the goal. The goal is for every lead to come in, for that lead to produce more than what it costs to get it in there. And if we can do this, we can have that perpetual motion machine. But if you need to stop and fill up your tank a couple times to get there, do it. Do it. But do not neglect your engine.
Yep, this is so great. I mean, we're really talking about the difference between a promotion and a business. You know, and a promotion is, hey, we go out and spend a lot of money, make a lot of noise, and make a lot of sales, and then it runs down to zero, and we got to go back to food all over again. And a business is takes a little more thought, a little more design. And yeah, we're figuring out how to it's kind of alchemy, you know. We're turning one thing into something more valuable. And I love the efficient engine model. And we really should stretch that because, and then we gotta bring our culture in. But I mean, let's really stretch that because you know we tend to think of well, you know, some cars get 20 miles to the gallon, some get 30. Maybe you'll have some extraordinary car that does better. But in business and in what Ryan's talking about, you could literally engineer an engine that gets 500 miles to the gallon, 1,000 miles to the gallon. Same leads, or not necessarily the same leads because they're processed differently, but the same market, you may even be offering sort of the same what other people are offering. But by thinking these issues through, and it's not something you do in an hour or a day or a week, it's something that evolves over time, but it's great to have this framework to guide you as you're building a business versus a promotion. Hey, Ryan, thanks so much for this. It's a very, very stimulating as usual. And we use these calls just for fun, for one thing, and to you know get us all thinking, but also to raise the profile of the upcoming system seminar, which will be April 15th through 17th in New York City. And for more information, you can go to thesystemseminar.com. So, Ryan, thanks again for your time, and we'll catch up with you soon, I hope.
Sounds good. Thanks, Ken.